Here's a surefire cure from hearing that Gautier song way too many times this summer. Actually, yes, I did have to cut you off. Now we're going to sit down and enjoy some old-timey ragtime tunes from the father of ragtime, Scott Joplin. This song is called Maple Leaf Rag, the first piece of sheet music to sell more than 1 million copies. And according to a discerning YouTube commenter, it's still better than Justin Bieber. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll talk about the Scott Joplin Ragtime Festival coming up in nearby Sedalia, Missouri. We'll find out what role Sedalia played in influencing Scott Joplin and his music. Plus, we'll discuss what makes Scott Joplin's music still relevant today. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Before jazz, before boogie-woogie music, before blues and rock and roll, and way before hip-hop, there was ragtime music. The first black-oriented popular music derived from the march music played by black bands in the 19th century. More than 100 years later, in the 21st century, for enthusiasts of all colors and creeds, there's no need to check the clock. It's still rag time. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we introduce the show with a song some of us all know, but we don't know the name of it. It's called The Entertainer, composed by Scott Joplin, who spent a lot of time in Sedalia, Missouri. And joining us today is Stacy Purvis, director of the Scott Joplin Foundation. We're going to discuss the evolution, decline, and resurgence of ragtime music and the legacy of Scott Joplin, which will play out at the Scott Joplin Ragtime Festival in Sedalia, June 6th through the 9th. Welcome to the show, Stacy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Who is Scott Joplin?
Well, Scott Joplin is the person that you don't know.
Right. It,
everyone, you play his songs and they're like, oh, I know that song. They equate the entertainer that was just playing with, I think, of the movie The Sting.
Or an ice cream truck.
A lot of people think ice cream truck or that ringtone that you get on your phone.
Right.
But it was Scott Joplin, a name not as familiar as probably some names in early jazz and stuff. He was a very serious man, but he loved music. He was a great composer. Actually, they say he was a better composer than he was a piano player.
How did he develop as a pianist?
He started off, he was able to, his mom worked as a housekeeper, and he was in the home of a German man who had a piano, and he started playing around on the piano. And that became his first piano teacher, was this German classical, more oriented person. So throughout his life, he always had more of a classical interest. Somehow he got into the ragtime world and kind of became the father of ragtime.
He is the father of ragtime. But why is he so an unsung musician outside of the circles of historians and music enthusiasts? He's not known.
You know, it's hard to say why he's not as popular. I've been with the organization now for almost 8 years, so it's hard for me to think of people not knowing him because I've learned so much about him. But I think it was just he did have a shorter lifespan. He died when he was 49 years old. He kind of faded away, and that music just had such a dramatic shift after his death. And I think it's just, you know, that resurgence that came back around. There was a little one in the 40s, but that main one came back around in the 70s. And that became where his legacy, I think, really began. I think at one point he actually even said that he probably wouldn't be known until after his death.
That's interesting enough because we will discuss the resurgence of it in the 1970s and how it evolved. But let's talk about ragtime itself. How did it originate and and what's unique about it?
They've said it's really funny. I love watching my performers explain it to kids. We have them come out and do shows with the kids, and they go through the different stages of how it evolved. And they'll take a song, a simple song like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, that has that very basic, you know, one note at a time, and then on their left hand they'll add in that ragged beat to it that makes it ragtime, and it's that syncopated rhythm that really just throws off that steady melody. And that's kind of where it came from. It's that real simple, they say it's a combination of the music of Africa and that very heavy beat and stuff with that parlor music of Europe and kind of the blending of the two.
Ragtime is the first time we start to see the syncopated rhythms or ragged rhythms, hence
yes.
the word ragtime.
Ragtime.
Born in the brothels and red light districts and
yes.
bar districts of St. Louis and New Orleans.
It was very much the music of the kids, the older folks, the older generations. They didn't like that music. It was that wild, crazy music that those kids were listening to, and it wasn't appropriate. And
so in that vein, it's safe to say that this genre of music, ragtime, was the earliest iteration of pop music.
Yes. Oh, it was the rap of its time.
It was the rap of its time, right.
Yeah, it was very – I think there's a story about where President Roosevelt's daughter was playing it at the White House, and it was very, you can't play that in the White House. That's not appropriate.
It was also very controversial music for the time period from both sides of the racial spectrum as well. It originated in the African-American community, but it also sort of had its roots in the minstrel circuit. One popular tune that sold a million pieces of sheet music was called All Coons Look Alike to Me.
Yes.
And what's more shocking about it is that it was composed and performed by Ernest Hogan, a black man. Tell
yes.
us about the racy subject matter.
Look back, and I have a lot of performers who collect old sheet music and their covers, and you look at just the artwork and some of the lyrics with the music, and it's just like nowadays you think that is just, wow, how do they even get away with using that word and those phrasings? And I guess that was just so commonplace, and it's hard for us to imagine today.
It's very hard to imagine today.
Yeah.
But Ernest Hogan must have known that this would appeal to a wide audience.
I guess
so. Oh, yeah.
So. Yeah.
That's true.
We've had
it's
a few.
It's kind of a groovy tune, too.
Every year we pick a theme piece of music to have as our theme for the festival. And there have been a few album covers or sheet music covers that we've looked at and gone, no, we can't use that. That is not even near appropriate.
One of the most unique things about ragtime as well is it's a period before recorded music for distribution on a mass scale. So
yes.
they have to sell the sheet music. Talk about that.
It was very hard for people to understand because there wasn't the MP3s and the YouTube videos. So for a piece of music to become popular, you had to sell it as a piece of sheet music. And then everyone learned to play it, and they'd play it in their homes. They'd play it in gatherings. You'd go to, you know, a saloon to hear it played. And the problem was ragtime was very hard to play. So to sell as much as it did was quite incredible. I mean, it's hard to think nowadays about how many people used to play the piano, but they say the majority of Americans had a piano in their home. It was just, you know, they weren't fancy pianos, but they all had a piano because that was your source of music back then.
And these people became popular based on these composed sheet music that was sold to millions of people. And talk about the popularity of Scott Joplin.
The Maple Leaf Rag did become the first piece of sheet music to ever sell a million copies. Didn't do it in the first year, but, you know, over time, that's quite a feat when you don't have a radio audience to send that out to. It's all, you know, word of mouth and, oh, you got to go try this song and I heard this somewhere. And
why do historians and music enthusiasts say the Maple Leaf Rag caught on so well?
You know, it's hard to pinpoint one certain thing, but people today still consider it like the gold standard of ragtime music. So it's just this that way that he composed that. I mean, he came out of the gate just, you know, with a number one hit basically, and was just, I think the rest of his life just keeping up to it. He was smart enough that he was getting royalties off of that, which was unheard of back then. So that one piece of music gave him enough to kind of live off of for the rest of his life.
Let's hear the Maple Leaf Rag, Scott Joplin's most famous work as the father of ragtime.
Thank you.
That was a snippet of Maple Leaf Rag, Scott Joplin's most famous work. He is the most famous musician associated with the musical genre ragtime. Ragtime kind of puts you in a really cheerful mood. It almost forces you to make jazz.
Yeah, it's hard to stay sour.
Yeah, it forces you to make jazz hands. Like, exactly. You'd want to have your hands down by your side and... You know, the music just keeps coming, and you're like, oh, I'm doing jazz hands now.
Exactly. You know, you can't just sit there and not tap your foot or kind of bounce along to the beat a little bit.
You're listening to the sounds of ragtime, and you're also listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Stacey Purvis, director of the Scott Joplin Foundation. We're talking about ragtime music and the legacy of the father of ragtime, Scott Joplin, which will play out at the Scott Joplin Ragtime Festival in Sedalia, Missouri, on June 6th through the 9th. Now, Stacey, the heyday for ragtime music actually ended around 1918, before and during World War I. It was the precursor to jazz, yet it lost popularity because of the rise of jazz. And Scott Joplin dies around this time. Tell us about that transformational period.
Yeah, he did. He died, as I mentioned, he was 49. He died in 1917. So right there when World War I was starting, and there was something about it. A lot of music kind of fades out and transitions into a different style. This one almost just kind of ended. They attribute a lot of that, I think, to the war. There was a lot of patriotic movement at that time, kind of brought around a different feel. And then as they came back from that war, and that war ended and the 20s began, and all those, you know, famous speakeasies and jazz clubs kind of were born, it was just a whole new generation and a new way of thinking. That war was over, good times were coming ahead, and I think everyone just kind of left that old stuff behind.
But before we get to the decline and resurgence of ragtime, talk about Scott Joplin's relationship to the state of Missouri and Sedalia in particular.
He lived off and on in Sedalia for probably about 12 years. He was there as a younger man. He did do some classes there, and he came back as he got a little bit older. He did take some classes at the college. The Smith College for Negroes. And so he was able to take classes there. There was a place where black people could go to school at that time. It was a town that was very friendly to different races and cultures at that time period, when a lot of places were very segregated. So he had a kind of a welcoming place to be, a place where he could play and do his songs. He played at the Maple Leaf Club, which is where the Maple Leaf Rag gets its name, and he played at the Black 400 Club. And that actually was a club where you would see both races show up. It kind of wasn't real publicized, but, you know, the well-to-do white people would go and go to the dances. And so it was a very easy mix for that time period. So it kind of gave a good place for him to settle.
Talk about his role as a teacher of music, because he's the father of ragtime, but he's trained as a classical pianist
yes.
as well.
He did teach a lot of students. A lot of people were inspired by him. Probably almost every ragtime composer that came after him, you know, if they met him, they were always asking him questions, wanting to learn from him, wanting to work with him. Arthur Marshall, Scott Hayden, got to work with him, composed some things with him. He worked with him while he was in Sedalia. I know Joseph Lamb, who's considered one of the top three, he got to meet Joplin when he was in New York and was just, you know, in awe of him. And all of them just, he was up on a pedestal for this generation, and they all just thought he was, you know, if they could sit down for 5 minutes with them, that was kind of the highlight of their life.
When did you first become introduced to ragtime?
Well, as a small child, I did endure a few years of piano lessons where I got to the level where you learn the easy for Elise and the easy entertainer. After that, I kind of, you know, was aware of it. My sister played the piano, so I always knew of the older music. But I started with the foundation about 7.5, almost 8 years ago. And that's when I really started developing more of my knowledge, learning about Scott Joplin's life, learning about the music. So,
let's talk about the resurgence of ragtime in the 1970s.
Yes.
When did that happen? Joshua Rifkin brings out a compilation, and then you have the movie The Sting.
The Sting. The Sting kicked it all off. That movie, every song in The Sting was Scott Joplin. So the soundtrack by Marvin Hamlisch was all Scott Joplin music. And for me, when I hear The Entertainer, I see Robert Redford and Paul Newman in my head, thanks to my mom, who probably was way too young to be watching The Sting, but I was watching it when I was a little girl.
When did you figure out that that movie that had that music, the music was actually Ragtime? When did you figure that out?
You know, I guess because I was doing piano lessons and stuff, so I had that little bit of musical background. And so I knew it was Scott Joplin. I don't know if I was aware that it was Ragtime music. I just thought it was, you know, that music from like the early 1900s. I didn't realize it had a specific name, I guess.
And then Ragtime Festival started to pop up. How did that come about?
Well, in Sedalia, it came about directly because of the Sting. They realized that this could be something really special. The movie came out. Everyone started listening to Scott Joplin again. The Entertainer was number one on the charts for weeks and weeks. And they realized, you know what? He lived here and we should celebrate that. And there were two festivals in 74 and 75. And then in 83, the foundation got really established. It became a 501c3. And we've had a festival every year since 1983.
And then, of course, the play Ragtime.
And then play the Ragtime
kind of
came out.
It off.
And yes. Yes. So the 70s were a good time to get it rolling again.
We have another song called "The Pineapple Rag."
Yes,
that we'll be playing later.
This one was really big in the movie The Sting too, and that's the one I kind of, you know, when they were asking what are big songs, and I think, you know, that one was in the movie, and a lot of people recognize that but just don't realize what it is.
What does a Ragtime festival look like? Take us there.
Well, our Ragtime festival is part indoors, part outdoors. So we have outdoor venues where we change performers every 20 minutes. I tease people that it's a little more kind of that saloon atmosphere because it's not formal. You can come and go. We keep those performers moving around. When you only give them 20 minutes, they get on and they talk and they laugh and they play some music, and then we switch to a new performer. So it's always changing. I joke. I'm like, well, if you don't like a certain particular performer and the way he plays music, it's going to change in just a few minutes, so just stick around.
So does each performer give a preface as to which rag they're playing, where it originated, how it came about?
Oh, yeah. They have so much knowledge in their heads. It's amazing. And the repertoire, they can sit down and just play at a minute's instance. I mean, it's fascinating to me. I don't know how they can recall all that information.
Let's talk about some of the descendants of Ragtime, such as Boogie Woogie.
Yes.
Boogie Woogie, directly out of Ragtime, piano-based, same sort of syncopated rhythm with a little bit more of a bounce.
A little more kick to it. Yeah, if you stand set still through Boogie Woogie, then something's wrong with you. We actually have a performer coming this year who's known actually more for his Boogie Woogie than his Ragtime. So we tease him. His name's Sonny Leyland. And we're always like, okay, Sonny, you have to at least play a little bit of Ragtime, or we can't justify bringing you here. But, you know, play about 10% Ragtime, and then you just go crazy with your Boogie Woogie. And he's actually doing a symposium about the history of it, and he's just amazing. And that just takes you off in a whole nother direction of music.
For those of you who may be unaware of what Boogie Woogie is, it's a direct descendant of Ragtime, and it's also an example of what Jerry Lee Lewis plays,
yes,
with
Great Balls of Fire.
And Little Richard, and yeah, that sort of scoot along rock,
yeah,
music.
And Sonny is so great because he looks like he came from the 1950s. I mean, he's still got the hair greased back a little bit, and you're just like, I'm in a time warp here.
Talk about the costumes that they wear at these festivals.
Oh, it's great. Some of them, it's really funny during the afternoon because it can be hot in Missouri. We all know that. So some of them will have on shorts and like a button-up shirt. A few years ago, some of our younger performers got dubbed the Ragtime Mafia because they were showing up in suits and ties to play, and it was like 90 degrees outside, and all the older performers are like, you all are making us look bad. You can't be showing up and performing in suits all the time.
A lot of enthusiasm among the younger Ragtime Mafia players?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. We have one. He comes out of Canada, Max Keenlyside. And I think last year on the plane from Prince Edward Island, he said he wrote two songs or something. I mean, I'm like, how do you just sit down and write songs? You're not even at a piano. And so he's already composing. He's 20 years old. He put out his first works of published music probably when he was 17. And it's just incredible to see this.
Well, Scott Joplin was a prodigy, so It's only right
it's
that
true.
He inspires
true.
Other piano prodigies.
One of our great youths is Adam Swanson. He just did a show with Michael Feinstein and Carnegie Hall. So, you know, 20 years old. I'm like, what was I doing when I was 20 years old?
Let's check out the Pineapple Rag, another ragtime favorite. Bouncy syncopated rhythm of the Pineapple Rag. We're talking about ragtime music with Stacey Purvis. She's the director of the Scott Joplin Foundation. Now, you choose a theme rag every year.
Yes, every year. I'm not sure when it started. This is my eighth year, but I know it started at least in the mid-90s. They look back 100 years, and we pick a piece of music that's 100 years old to be the theme rag. So this year, it is Scott Joplin's The New Rag, written in 1912.
So not necessarily new per se.
Not new anymore.
Not new anymore. 100 years old. So as you're running forward, are you
We're
running out of rags?
We're about to run out of rags. this year, I think we had a choice of two. I think next year we don't have a choice. I think it's, well, this is the one he wrote in 1914 or 1913.
What made you choose this particular one? Was it just by virtue of the fact that it was written in 1912?
If we have a big choice, what we do is some years he did four or five or six in one year. So then we set him down and we look at the covers. Like we said, the cover art, some of them it's a little sketchy for being appropriate nowadays. It's not very politically correct. So we pretty much eliminate those quickly. We also try to pick pieces of music that maybe aren't as well known so that people kind of get a chance to learn about some of the music that maybe didn't become as popular as like The Entertainer or Maple Leaf.
What's going to be different about this festival this year?
Well, it's always different. It's going to be a little different for me. It's my last year, so it's going to be a little bittersweet after 8 years. But we do have some great performers. We have one of our new performers who I haven't even met yet is 11 years old, and
wow,
he just won the Junior Old Time World Championship Piano Playing Contest. And so I haven't even met him yet, and he's already, you know, beating out kids that are 14, 15, 16 years old.
So that's a testament to ragtime's staying power.
Exactly. It seems to draw him in. I think he will be our youngest male performer. Morgan Seaver is 15. She'll be our youngest female performer, and she's just a sweetheart.
And we're going to go out with some more ragtime tunes, or rags as they're called. Let's hear one of the more celebrated rags of this year's festival, The New Rag. That's The New Rag. Our guest is Stacey Purvis, director of the Scott Joplin Foundation. We're talking about ragtime music and the legacy of Scott Joplin, which will play out at the Scott Joplin Ragtime Festival in Sedalia, June 6th through the 9th. Thank you very much for coming, Stacey. And we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we chat with a filmmaker who has a project about local artist Lee Tisdale, who most people know as their friend Motley. More on that incredible story when we return.